This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
She's just sending a message maybe to the husband to say, you know, we must be part of the people across the world, whether they are developed, as long as they are people, they need American support. So I think I like her because of that.
That's one of many Malawians who spoke on U.S. First Lady Melania Trump's visit to Malawi on the second leg of her tour of Africa. We'll hear what more Malawians have to say coming up. Also, Cameroon's president campaigns in separatist regions under tight security. Namibia's president tells VOA he's focusing on encouraging new economic growth in his country. And three Western countries express concerns about South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. U.S. First Lady Melania Trump arrived in Malawi from Ghana today on the second leg of her tour of Africa. Mrs. Trump headed to a primary school in Lilongwe, where about 8,000 children are taught by just 75 teachers. The White House is donating school supplies, and the U.S. Agency for International Development will provide textbooks. Christina Juwata, like many Malawians who spoke with VOA, said she knew about Trump's visit but knew little about the First Lady.
All I know is she is a first lady. She'll be here to talk about health and education. That's all I know.
The White House said Malawi was chosen as a destination because of its high poverty rate and the difficulties that children have in accessing education. Aid for Africa was scheduled for significant cuts. President Trump's proposed budget says Congress has not approved those cuts. Well, Clement Chignoko in Lilongwe thought the trip might help persuade the president to strengthen aid to Africa.
She's just sending a message maybe to the husband to say, you know, we must be part of the people across the world, whether they are developing, whether they are developed, as long as they are people, they need American support. So I think I like her because of that.
Mrs. Trump leaves Malawi later today and heads to Kenya. Egypt will be the final stop on her African tour. Well, as we said, the First Lady is expected in Kenya on her next tour of Africa. And Zetsi Were is Kenyan development economist and a newspaper columnist. Journalist Ruben Chama asked her how people in Kenya view Mrs. Trump's visit.
Well, I think firstly, it's a sign of goodwill from Trump administration that she's coming and expressing interest in Africa and in Kenya. But of course, the bigger question many Africans will have is, will Trump come? Will he ever come? Is he going to come? So I think it's welcome. So it's just a sign of goodwill.
Why do you think she chose to visit Kenya in particular?
Well, I think Kenya has had very strong relationships with the U.S. for a very long time. I mean, if you look at the key economies on the African continent, if you look at Greater East Africa, Kenya is a key economy. And I think also more broadly speaking, if you look at the importance Kenya plays in the U.S. Efforts on ending terrorism, particularly, you know, issues such as Al-Shabaab. So Kenya has always been important both from an economic point of view, from a military point of view, but also, you know, sort of more socially speaking, around the involvement that the U.S. government has just in the governance conversation the country has.
Do you see any economic or political issues between the two countries?
Well, I mean, I think if there are, Melania won't be in an official position to comment on it. I mean, she can't negotiate on behalf of the U.S. government, obviously. So I really think this is just more about a soft power move, demonstrating to the Kenyan people that the U.S. is still present and still notices and appreciates the presence of our country. But I don't think anything concrete in terms of economic or political outcomes will come out of this in terms of government-to-government interaction.
And Azenze, Mrs. Trump also launched a campaign, and I think some of our interests include cyberbullying and also drug abuse. How serious are these issues, especially among Kenyan youth?
Well, I think drug abuse is an issue that's growing in concern. I think because of the exposure that particularly the young Kenyans have to international media and the types of drugs that are becoming increasingly available in the country. So I think that's relevant. I think cyberbullying is also important, particularly for young people who are active online. There have been cases where people have been bullied online and sort of the negative fallout from that. I don't think these are necessarily priority issues. I think if you talk to young people, they'd be more concerned about joblessness and idleness and not being able to earn a living after they've gone to school and education. So I think in terms of the priority of things, it may not be up there, but it's definitely stuff that young people grapple with.
And finally, how popular is President Trump in Kenya? Is our visit expected to affect how the president or the U.S. is seen in Kenya?
Well, I don't know what other Kenyans think of Trump, but I think Melania's visit is welcome. I think this government and this administration has always made it clear that they seek to interact with the Trump administration. A few weeks ago, President Kenyatta went to visit Trump in the USA. So I think in terms of economic interactions, there is momentum behind both governments to take the conversation forward. And I think Melania is just another dip in the ocean in terms of fostering relations between the two countries.
That was economist Nzetsi Were speaking with our colleague Ruben Chama in Nairobi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And it is coming up on 12 minutes past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. U.S. First Lady Melania Trump arrives in Malawi from Ghana today on the second leg of her tour of Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In more news around the continent, Cameroon's ruling party has held several campaign rallies for the October 7th presidential poll in the country's English-speaking regions, despite threats from separatists. Authorities say separatists abducted at least 8 party officials and attacked some campaigners. Nonetheless, the party says it will continue campaigning in the regions and even mocked opposition parties for avoiding them. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Bamenda in northwestern Cameroon.
President Paul Biya's Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, CPDM, is touting itself as the only political party worth voting for on Sunday in the country's turbulent English-speaking regions. CPDM Secretary-General Jean Kwete told supporters in the northwest town of Bamenda Tuesday they are the only party to campaign there, showing the opposition does not care about the people.
Those political parties today, they have abandoned you and fled the region. They are seen only on the television.
Anglophone separatists began a violent campaign in northwest and southwest Cameroon 1 year ago, citing alleged discrimination and oppression by the country's French-speaking majority. Despite the threat from separatists, supporters of President Biya campaigned in the northwest over the weekend under heavy security. All 8 of his opposition challengers have avoided or were chased out of the 2 English-speaking regions. Mifiri Usmanu of the Cameroon Democratic Union says that the CPDM has military protection so it can more easily campaign in the regions.
L'élection présidentielle de 2018 se tient dans un contexte très particulier.
He says, under the present context of terrible conflicts in the English-speaking regions, the government should encourage reconciliation instead of using force to get angry people to vote. But even under heavy security, the ruling party was not immune to the region's unrest. Authorities say separatists attacked several CPDM campaign caravans, but the military killed an undisclosed number of the attackers. Authorities also say 8 CPDM supporters were abducted from a hotel in Bamenda. Professor Willibrod Zengwa says campaigning in the regions is not enough and the ruling party should engage in an all-inclusive dialogue to end the unrest.
They want to provide a solution through their political lenses. It is only their political party that should be able to provide a solution to the problem. And we say no. We are saying that Cameroonians from all walks of life should get to the field and talk to the people in a tone of appeasement, keeping their political jackets by the side.
Nearly 400 people have been killed since the separatist conflict broke out in November 2017. The Anglophone separatists want autonomous rule from the government in Yaoundé and have vowed on social media to prevent Sunday's election. Cameroon's elections management body ELECAM has insisted that elections will take place in the troubled spot. ELECAM created polling centers it says will accommodate hundreds of polling stations that will be guarded by the military. 8 candidates are running against Biya, but the 85-year-old president, who has ruled the Central African country since 1982, is favored to win another 7-year term that would end in 2025. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Bamenda.
Namibia's President Hage Geingob says he's focusing on encouraging new economic growth in his country. His priorities include working toward meeting sustainable development goals and implementing land reforms. Geingob was in New York recently to attend the United Nations General Assembly. While there, he held an event to introduce American investors to Namibia. He spoke with VOA's Lenore Madu on the sidelines of that event.
Poverty, to me, is the biggest problem in Africa, especially when society is divided in haves and have-nots, and that is painted with color, it's worse. So in our country, as a settler colony, where white people came to settle, and they are citizens of Namibia, but we have unequal situation where those who are privileged are still enjoying the land situation, even in economy. So our problem, therefore, is that, look, we must build Namibian house, holding hands, all of us, black, white, yellow, and live together. But we must also look in sharing in our resources. We must create a situation where we can use our land, all of us and Namibians together.
You're hosting an investment forum to attract American investors. What is the message to the investors?
Namibia is ready to do business with you. As I said, good governance, peace, unity provides conducive investment climate. Namibia provides that. You can easily repatriate your profits. It's a peaceful country. It has all the amenities for investors, and also people want to have recreational facilities. We have infrastructure developed. So we are saying, come now, Namibia is ready in agro-industry, in mining, of course, mining is the main thing, but also the energy, talking about out of Southern Africa, we have energy deficit. These are all in a wind energy, you have the solar energy possibilities. So energy mix is there, but whole of Southern Africa has problems. So come, doors are open, friendly people who welcome you.
And some critics say that African countries do not trade among themselves as much as they should. What is your take on this issue?
The problem we have in Africa is that we have to add value to our resources. We are trading in raw materials. Now, Botswana and Namibia have diamonds. How do you trade? Unless we add value to our diamonds, so my jewelry may be better, therefore I could trade, but we have beef, we have diamonds. Mm-hmm. And besides that, we are always looking outward. Now we are looking inward so that we can discuss as Africans and trade internally.
Earlier this year, you traveled to China, and I want to talk about China, where you met with President Xi Jinping. What transpired from this meeting with regards to cooperation, China-Namibia cooperation?
Well, China is opening and is not only in Africa. I used to like Waldorf Astoria here. It was bought by Chinese. Chinese also bailed out American economy here. So Chinese are really going out to Africa. We are welcoming them. provided, as they told me once, when I asked them, oh, comrades, I see all these Western businesses here. They said, we opened up 30 years ago. However, that's very important, however, whoever comes here comes on our own terms. In Africa, people go on their terms. So Chinese can come, Americans can come, but they must come on our own terms.
Because a lot of skeptics are saying China's motives are not very clear, and they are asking African countries if they really understand what they are getting themselves into.
So that's an insult.
Yes.
I reject that. They are trying to say Africans are small-minded,
yes.
They are children, mm-hmm. They don't understand. Who can tell us that? We fought for our freedom, not supported by Western countries. We gained our independence, not to exchange it for somebody else. I said that in China.
President Geingob, thank you so much for your time.
You are welcome.
That was Namibian President Hage Geingob speaking with our colleague Lenore Madu. Well, U.S. involvement in Libya has been a politically divisive issue ever since the U.S. launched the UN-authorized military intervention in 2011. It was aimed at saving pro-democracy protesters from a crackdown by Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The intervention led to political chaos that continues to this day. Last April, President Donald Trump said the U.S. should have no role in the country beyond fighting Islamic State militants. However, experts believe a more U.S. active role is crucial to Libyan stability. From Washington, VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy has the story.
A few months ago, U.S. lawmakers strongly endorsed continued U.S. engagement in Libya, calling it vital for building the country's unity and keeping it from becoming a hub for terrorism. Elena Rosletinen, a Florida Republican, is the chairwoman of the House Foreign Relations Subcommittee on the Middle East.
Despite backing by the United Nations and its partners, the Western-based Government of National Accord has not been able to provide security or consolidate power throughout Libya's vast territory. Armed militias profit off the lack of security and the rule of law, smuggling drugs, smuggling weapons, and people, using Libya as a waypoint into Europe.
She called on the Trump administration to get involved in Libya, starting with sending a new U.S. ambassador to Tripoli. Frederick Weary, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, echoed Rosletinen's concerns.
The U.S. and its partners must continue to play a strong, convening, and persuading role, especially among its regional Arab allies and also the Europeans, to support the UN-led roadmap.
The UN roadmap that the United Nations Security Council approved last year called for an amendment of the previous UN-sponsored political agreement, holding an UN-sponsored national conference for all of Libya's political factions, adopting a constitution, and finally holding elections for president and a parliament. However, instability in Libya has continued to be a barrier to such goals. Muftah Tayyar, a former Libyan ambassador to Mexico, said porous security conditions in Libya have contributed to the country's problems.
Stability. This stability is threatened by the local militia, foreign intervention, and sometimes foreign silence of some powers.
Tayyar said the U.S. disengaged from Libya following its military intervention in 2011. Basma Momani, professor of international affairs at the University of Waterloo, praised the U.S. role in liberating Libya and preventing Gaddafi from replicating the massacres that took place in Syria. However, she said, the U.S. should have continued its engagement to help stabilize post-conflict Libya.
I think that disengagement happened way too early, and hence we have this fracturing of various forces vying for political power today inside Libya.
Momani said the Obama administration did feel that the United States had failed in state building in Iraq and decided to disengage in Libya to avoid repeating the same mistakes. For Renan Smith, managing editor of Libya Analysis, the U.S. could still provide decisive element in the effort to curb militias' destabilizing role in Libya.
I think what the US could do, they can send in a peacekeeping force. What Libya needs is a kind of neutral international force that can act as a kind of police force. However, that's politically sensitive both in Libya and the US, and I don't think there's a political will there. I think that's unlikely to happen.
Ambassador David Mack, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Near East, agreed and said Libya's strategic location and proximity to Europe makes it a favored target for proxy wars by outside parties. He said the U.S. should recognize the need to be involved in Libya, but not as the major player.
The European nations and Libya's neighbors that are most directly impacted by instability in Libya, if they were to take the lead in trying to reestablish some kind of stability in Libya, I think they would find that the United States would be supportive, but only in a support role, not a lead role.
At the policy level, a U.S. official familiar with the administration's policy stance said the United States considers the UN-led facilitated political process to be the only means to achieve stability and security in Libya. But some U.S. lawmakers, including Ross Lehtinen, said the U.S. should do more. Libya needs U.S. leadership to corral the various countries interfering in Libya and to help push the political reconciliation process forward. Mohammed El-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Ken McClain, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.